All right, friends, it's HoopBall promo time. This is big because this is our 2020-2021 NBA season product rollout, and I am so excited to tell you about what we've got. We almost never push our HoopBall products, but this is the window of the year where we need to power that engine. So let me tell you what's out. We've got our draft guide, our flagship shining beacon to the most comprehensive draft guide in fantasy. We cover all over 400 players this season with future access pass to our Brewski 150. Now, if you don't know what the Brewski 150 is, I'm here to give you the need-to-know info. This is the fantasy draft list that has beaten every other list for 10 straight years. And new this year for HoopBall, we're unveiling our monthly membership plans featuring our fantasy pass, draft guide, Brewski 150, our new DFS pass, premium in-season tools, as well as our wager pass for sports bettors. Everything you need, we've got you covered. 365 around the clock, HoopBall Tools is your one-stop shop for your NBA treasure trove of fantasy need-to-know information. All that you need and more, check us out. Head to hoop-ball.com or follow at HoopBallFantasy on Twitter now. Check it out, give us a follow, get your tools, and win your league. All right, friends, it's HoopBall promo time. This is big because this is our 2020-2021 NBA season product rollout, and I am so excited to tell you about what we've got. We almost never push our HoopBall products, but this is the window of the year where we need to power that engine. So let me tell you what's out. We've got our draft guide, our flagship shining beacon to the most comprehensive draft guide in fantasy. We cover all over 400 players this season with future access pass to our Brewski 150. Now, if you don't know what the Brewski 150 is, I'm here to give you the need-to-know info. This is the fantasy draft list that has beaten every other list for 10 straight years. And new this year for HoopBall, we're unveiling our monthly membership plans featuring our fantasy pass, draft guide, Brewski 150, our new DFS pass, premium in-season tools, as well as our wager pass for sports bettors. Everything you need, we've got you covered. 365 around the clock, HoopBall Tools is your one-stop shop for your NBA treasure trove of fantasy need-to-know information. All that you need and more, check us out. Head to hoop-ball.com or follow at HoopBallFantasy on Twitter now. Check it out, give us a follow, get your tools, and win your league.
The following is a HoopBall presentation.
Well, hey there. Thanks for tuning in. It is February 12th, 2020. I'm your host, Alan Strokey, and this is the Box Score Breakdown, a HoopBall.com and Hawaiian Isles Kona Coffee presentation. Hawaiian Isles Kona Coffee is the title sponsor of this podcast and all podcasts on HoopBall. You can check them out on their website, HawaiianIsles.com. You could look them up on Amazon by searching for Hawaiian Isles Kona Coffee, and you could always find them on Twitter at HI Kona Coffee. Hawaiian Isles, get yourself a cup today. It is a busy Wednesday night, of course, per usual. I believe we had 11 games tip off tonight. I'm going to be riding solo on this one, like I did last week, as I mentioned. Our regular co-host, Kirk Beach, is going to be away for the program for a little bit. He should be back sometime in March. And yeah, I it's funny. I learned a pretty valuable lesson about doing this sort of thing last week because, you know, I've done a solo podcast before when I was doing the Thursday night shows. Those nights usually only give you 4 games. Last week gave me 10. So that was a lot to take on. Not to mention, we had a whole bunch of trade deadline nonsense going on. And yeah, they teach you in radio, in podcasting, I suppose, really anything that's just purely audio, to avoid dead air at all costs. Dead air being just no long pauses or silences. Apparently, it's not good for the listening experience. Makes the listener feel like something's wrong. Maybe like there's a buffer. Perhaps they hit the pause button by accident. Maybe I got disconnected. Who knows? I did radio in college, and they really hammered that home that, like, you could never, ever, ever do dead air. Maybe that was more of a radio thing than on podcasting. I took that lesson to heart, especially last week. And, you know, I think I was a little excited, had a lot to talk about, had a lot I wanted to get to, and I started a pretty fast pace for myself in the early goings. I was talking very, very fast. And that mix of the fast speak and the lack of pauses started killing me towards the end. You could go back and listen if you want. Those last three or four games that I went over, you could hear a noticeable difference in my voice. I sounded strained. I just could not keep up with the pace that I set for myself. So for this week, I am going to try and practice a slower but still, you know, effective pace. You know, I don't want to be too plodding here. I'm going to try and dial my pace back, maybe a little less Washington Wizardsy and a little more, I don't know, who's a slow-paced team in the NBA? Charlotte? Let's just say Charlotte. They probably have a garbage pace. Somewhere in between there. Let's go for a Denver Nuggets-like pace. I'm going to try and be a little slower, practice that dead air a little bit more. Not a terrible idea to throw this on maybe 1.25 speed. Not just because, you know, I'm anticipating this to be a super long show, but you know how this goes. So many games to cover and a lot of post-trade deadline stuff that we need to talk about. Maybe help you guys get through all of this because I feel like I got a lot to talk about. So without further ado, let's get into the proceedings here. We're going to start with the first game of the night that really bummed me out, personally speaking. It was the Atlanta Hawks and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Cleveland taking this game 127-105. They lead the season series between the Hawks and the Cavs 2-0, which is disgusting from the perspective of this Hawks fan over here. We'll start with the Hawks side of things. Trae Young, we'll start with the positives. He was fine. 27 points, 12 assists, 2 steals, 2 three-pointers on 8 of 17 shooting, 4 turnovers. John Collins had 23 points with 4 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal, and a block shot. Kevin Huerter was fine, 11 points. Well, he's okay. 11 points on 4 of 12 shooting, 2 assists, a rebound, a steal, and 4 turnovers. These three guys are still the primary offensive creators, at least until Clint Capella gets into the fold. The rookies, DeAndre Hunter and Cam Reddish, have definitely been coming on recently. Cam Reddish returning in this game after an absence with a concussion. We'll get to him in a second here. But they have cut into those two have cut into Kevin Huerter's production a little bit. He's been floating out around the top 110 to 120. In 9 category leagues over his last month, which is definitely more close to the kind of fantasy player he is than that one top 60-ish pace that he was going on about a month ago. So I think he's still a hold in standard leagues because he does have the ability to get you some threes and a little trickle of rebounds and assists. The playmaking duties have definitely taken a slight step back with the arrival of Jeff Teague in particular. But he's not terrible. He's not totally off the fantasy radar. And I do think that there is some upside for him there. Maybe to get himself closer to the fringy top 100 level, jump up a couple of rounds if he can figure out his efficiency because his shot's been a little whack lately. That's the Kevin Huerter situation there. Cam Reddish is the guy... Well, actually, hold on one second. We should also talk about Dwayne Dedman, who moved into the starting lineup but was plagued with foul trouble for the majority of the game. I think he played like 7 minutes in the first half or something like that. Incredibly, though, in 18 minutes, he still did the things that you put him on your team for. 3 steals and 3 blocks in a three-pointer. That's 7 cash counters, 7 points, 4 rebounds, and an assist in 18 minutes. And by all accounts, a really good line considering the playing time. He's going to be starting until Clint Capella is able to get into the starting lineup. That could be a while. I think that the Hawks have a lot of incentive to keep Capella out until the heel issue in the plantar fasciitis. I don't even know why I bothered saying what that injury is because I knew I wouldn't be able to pronounce it. But he has that going on too. He just, look, the Hawks aren't going anywhere. They have long accepted that this is a year that's lost and is going to be building this team back up. They're going to try and finish strong, but they're not going for the playoffs. And Clint Capela is a guy that's he's a centerpiece now. He's part of their future. They're not going to play him in meaningless games. The word is that he's going to try and play after the All-Star break, but the key word there is try. There's no definitive timetable on him. They're optimistic that it's going to be soon, but we're not sure about that yet. There is a reason that they went ahead and traded for Dwayne Dedman. Okay. Like they didn't, I mean, obviously that they like him as a culture guy. He's very, very well liked in the locker room, and he is a really good backup center. Always has been. Fits the team identity a lot better than Alex Len did. But he's here for a reason. He's going to be starting as long as Capella's out. I'm of the opinion that Capela could be out a little longer than just past the All-Star break. And this is a roundabout way of saying that Dedman is a guy that I would own on my fantasy team for the streaming purposes and perhaps a little beyond. The other guy I want to talk about is Cam Reddish, who in this game had 16 points on 4 of 11 shooting, 2 3-pointers, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal. Reddish, like I mentioned, he came back from a prolonged absence with that concussion that he suffered about a week ago. And he got back to doing what he had been doing over his last 10 games, which I have those numbers for you right here. Over his last 10 games before going down with the injury, Cam Reddish was posting top 90 value in 9 category leagues. 29 minutes a game, about 14 points, 2.5 threes, 4 rebounds, an assist and a half, a steal and a half, on 43% shooting from the field and 86% shooting from the line. That's basically what he did tonight. He's really turned a corner in terms of his shot, which 43% is nothing great, but it's a hell of a lot better than the 33% that he was shooting to start the year. He's turned a corner of sorts, and he is taking away from Kevin Huerter. So he's a guy that teams in need of threes and steals in particular, I'd say deep league teams, I think that he's definitely worth a flyer. I don't think he needs 30 minutes a game to be productive if he's hitting shots like this. The defensive stuff has been here and there, but he looks a lot better and more active in that department. I mean, he's been this team's best defender probably all season, but in terms of statistical production, he's definitely been deflecting more more passes and helping you out in that facet of the box score. And that's going to help float his value. As long as he's not murdering your field goal percentage, he could be a somewhat useful fantasy guy in deep leagues. And that's about it for Atlanta. I'm kind of disgusted with the fact that they got obliterated by Cleveland tonight. And it kind of makes sense with Dedman in foul trouble. This team had no bigs to go to. You have the gigantic gargantuan lineup of Cleveland taking full advantage of that. The Cavs out-rebounded the Hawks 55-38 tonight. Destroyed them on the offensive glass too. 38 offensive rebounds. Courtesy of new Cavalier Andre Drummond, who had 10 offensive boards, 15 total. He had 14 points, 15 rebounds, 2 block shots, and assists on 6 of 10 shooting in only 22 minutes. This was, for the most part, a blowout from the get. Well, not really a blowout from the get-go, but this game was well in hand right from the start. Atlanta was never in it at any point. So Drummond didn't need to play a whole bunch. Kevin Love was out with an Achilles soreness, I believe. Unclear what the long-term diagnosis or prognosis is with that one. We'll have to wait for more updates. But that meant that Larry Nance Jr. got a lot of playing time. You know, the big thing we've been watching with Cleveland is what kind of role, if any, that Larry Nance would have in terms of fantasy. This is a 4-big team. With Drummond, Kevin Love, Larry Nance, and Tristan Thompson. All 4 of those guys are expected to play somewhere at least 20 minutes a night. And that's not great for Larry Nance and his fantasy outlook. Tonight he reminded you why we were all so excited about him pre-trade deadline. Because of the potential that he would have an opening in Cleveland to get to a high 30-minute role. He played 35 minutes in tonight's ballgame, 23 points, 12 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 steals and 2 block shots and 2 3-pointers. Yeah, one of the better nine cat lines on the night. Really, really, really good stuff out of him. He should definitely be held on to. Even we need to see what he looks like with Kevin Love in the fold, because we only got like one game and it was really not encouraging. I think he saw 20 minutes and split that time with 20 minutes with Tristan Thompson off the bench when Love was playing as well. By all accounts, he's not going to be a roster-worthy player once Love is back, but we need to see the extent of this Love injury, and we really need to feel this whole situation out in its entirety when Love can play before we can make any definitive moves there. Speaking of guys who went off, Tristan Thompson, in 26 minutes, scored 27 points, grabbed 11 rebounds, and was 3-for-3 from three-point range. I think he hit two in a row in the first quarter alone. An assist and a steal. He was just going nuts, and the crowd was loving it, so he just played a lot. Probably part of the reason why Drummond only saw 22 minutes in this game. I turned it off, by the way. I didn't see the end of it, so I don't know exactly how it went. I was watching this game, and I did not want to finish it. He's still a drop. He's a drop. I'm not... Even if Love is out for an extended period of time, I don't foresee there being a lot of situations where Tristan Thompson's going to have fantasy value. He was already pretty fringy when there was a three big setup in Cleveland, and there's absolutely no way that he survives a four big setup. And yeah, that's sort of that. The guy I want to talk about with Cleveland is Kevin Porter Jr., who a lot of people have been on about for the last couple of weeks or so. He's been doing a lot in the scoring department, averaging 16 points per game over his last seven, all of which have been double-digit scoring efforts. He's definitely talented. Can definitely say that about him. But I think that people are getting a little too ahead of themselves with projecting his fantasy value, because this is a guy who offers nothing in the defensive stat department, like less than nothing. On the seven-game stretch, he's averaging close to a steal a game, and that's about it. No block shots. He doesn't do it much in the rebounding department. His free throws are pretty shaky, and his turnovers are really, really bad. He was good tonight, before I get too ahead of myself. He scored 18 points on 7 of 11 shooting, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal, no turnovers, and 2 three-pointers. But with all the scoring that he's doing, he's still just been outside the top 180 in 9 category leagues and outside the top 140 in 8 category leagues. So it's not just the turnovers that's killing him. It's the lack of other things beyond the scoring. Now, I will give him credit that this stretch has been rather impressive, because he's been doing this on 51% shooting. And on the season, he's averaging 45% shooting, which is, for a rookie shooting guard, that's pretty impressive. But it also tells me that the scoring run is also pretty unsustainable. You're not going to see a rookie just hit a perimeter player like Kevin Porter Jr. hit 50% of his shots every night. If that starts dipping, the scoring starts dipping, and then he really doesn't have any fantasy value. He's only on radars right now because he's scoring so efficiently. So I'm not there yet. He's a guy that I think you can leave on the wire, and definitely in standard settings. You can consider him in deep leagues if you're in need of the scoring, especially if he's hitting at a nice percentage right now. But he's, you know, the turnovers need to be dealt with, which he did tonight. But in general, he hasn't. And yeah, he's tough to rely on in that respect. Too much time on that game. Let's pick up the pace. Next game on the docket, Detroit in Orlando. The Magic won this one in overtime, 116-112. They have tied the season series with the Pistons 1-1. We'll start with Christian Wood, who is the obvious winner from the trade deadline. 26 points, 12 rebounds, an assist, and 2 block shots on 9 of 14 shooting with a 3-pointer. You don't need me to dive deep into this one. This guy is going to go off for the rest of the season. Simple as that. Thon Maker is a guy that we've all been interested in, because I don't think we all saw that he was expected him to jump to the starting lineup, which he has. He played 27 minutes in this game. 18 points, 2 rebounds, an assist, a steal, a block shot, and 2 3-pointers. The rebounds were particularly low, which makes sense because Orlando's got a pretty beefy front line. Thon has always been a rather underwhelming rebounder for his size. I think per 36, he's only averaging like 7 rebounds a game, which is really not a lot, which is not a lot at all for what is he, like 7'2"? It's pretty nuts. But he has been fantasy relevant. He's been a fringy top 100 guy over the last four games since the trade deadline. And he's doing it with a mix of three-pointers and block shots. He's averaging about three per game between those two. Block and a half and three and a half. That's pretty good stuff. The field goal percent is also pretty high, like it was in this game. And that's all going to hold. I don't see him helping your team, though, outside those categories. Those categories are very useful, especially the threes on high field goal percentage. That in and of itself is a pretty tough statistical combination to come by. The block shots on top of that's even better, but he just doesn't do a whole lot else. The points will come and go. The rebounds will come and go. Neither will be that consistent. And he's not going to be the world's best free throw shooter. He will rarely, if ever, give you anything in the assist department. He won't steal a whole bunch. So he is valuable, though. Fringy top 100 asset. Maybe get himself into the top 90 if he keeps this sort of 27-minute role that he's playing with. So he's definitely on my radar. A solid standard league add if you're in need of threes and blocks. Rich Jackson's another guy worth talking about. 36 minutes, 5 of 16 shooting, 12 points, 11 assists, 3 rebounds, and 4 turnovers. Here's two stats I want you to know about Rich Jackson. All right, this is over his last 9 games. He's averaging 16 points per game. Pretty good, right? But he's doing that on 16 shots. It's taking him 16 shots to get to 16 points. He's hitting 37% of his field goals. He's not taking a ton of free throws, only 2 per game. Because he's only getting to the line once every game over this last 9. Another stat I want you to know is that he's averaging a combined 0.4 defensive stats, 0.3 steals, 0.1 blocks. He is a horrendous fantasy asset. I can't emphasize it enough. He is the prime example of a guy that people are intoxicated with because he puts together nice-looking scoring lines with high assist numbers. Terrible fantasy guy. Outside the top 200 over that 9-game span that I just referenced in 9-category leagues. Outside the top 180 in 8-category leagues. He's the shooting's not going to get any better because he's the main guy offensively outside Christian Wood. He's only going to be encouraged to chuck shots. The assists tonight are nice, but typically for a starting point guard, he does not look to get his guys involved. He likes to get his shot first. He's a points league player. You can definitely consider him if you're in a points league format, but if you're in a category setting, I cannot emphasize enough to stay away from this guy. I don't care how badly you need the scoring. The trade-offs are just not worth it. Hate his fantasy game. Derrick Rose returned to in this ball game, and this is his first game with the Pistons post-trade deadline. He was pretty rusty, as assumed. 1 of 13 shooting from the field, 2 points, 4 assists, steal and a block in 17 minutes. He was already a standard league type of player, and I do think that he's still going to hold on to that. I like him a lot more than Reggie Jackson. He'll be able to score for you and do it efficiently while also helping you out from the line. And he'll also be able to get a trickle of assists here and there, too. He's the guy that I'm most interested in of the point guard situation. It's really him and Christian Wood and a little bit of Thon Maker for Detroit for me. Those are the three guys that I want from a fantasy perspective. The other guy would have been Bruce Brown, but much less so considering all these guards are back in the fold. He started again at shooting guard, 26 minutes in this game, only 2 points, 2 assists, and 10 rebounds. The 10 rebounds is really more indicative of just like his athleticism and his energy out there. He's a big hustle stat kind of guy, nice steal rate, good rebounding from a guard position, and can get involved in the passing game. But with Reggie Jackson and Derrick Rose in the fold, he's just going to have like no fantasy value. And Markieff Morris, I guess, is worth talking about. 14 points in 21 minutes, 5 of 7 shooting, 4 three-pointers, 8 rebounds, an assist, and a block shot. I see him as a threat to Thon Maker, but we've yet to really see that actualize. I think Dwayne Casey is giving Thon a lot of opportunity here, and he hasn't been terrible in it. And I think that his upside's enough to fend off Markieff and keep him in a bench role. I think that they like the rapport that Markieff and Rose have with each other too. So that does help Thon. I'm keeping an eye on Markieff though to see if his minutes start trending up. That's definitely going to come at the expense of Maker. McCurr. I'm probably not pronouncing that right. And yeah, that's really about it here. Svi Mykhailiuk got back into action as well after missing a few games. I'm not sure with what injury. I think I missed that one in my notes. 18 minutes though, 8 points, 3 rebounds and a steal and 1 3-pointer. He has very limited appeal as a 3-point specialist in my mind. And if anything, he's just going to take minutes from Bruce Brown. So there you go. That's their Detroit Pistons breakdown. Let's go over to the Magic side of things, for which all account they are a pretty boring fantasy team. 25 points out of Aaron Gordon, who led the scoring charge for Orlando. Pretty good game for him. Almost a triple-double. 25 points, 9 rebounds, 9 assists, a steal and a block shot, and 3 3-pointers. That is on 8 of 15 shooting. That is not the norm for him. He's a pretty rough percentages guy, mostly just points and rebounds. Nikola Vucevic had a pretty good game himself, 19 points, 11 rebounds, 7 assists, 3 steals, a block shot, and a 3-pointer on 9 of 21 shooting. Markel Fultz played pretty big as well, 22 points, 10 assists, 5 rebounds, 2 steals, and a 3-pointer on 8 of 14 shooting. And Evan Fournier was his usual self on offense, 19 points, 2 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, and 4 3-pointers. This is a pretty straightforward fantasy team. Nikola Vucevic is obviously an early round type of player. Evan Fournier has been a mid to late round player on the season. Markel Fultz, while I can appreciate the type of season he's had, he is not on the fantasy radar. And Aaron Gordon is not a good fantasy player in pretty much any format. So there's that breakdown for them. That's pretty straightforward. Toronto and Brooklyn's our next game here. The Brooklyn Nets win 101 to the Raptors 91. They avoided being swept on the season. The Raptors finish 3-1 against the Nets. We'll start on the Toronto side of things. Serge Ibaka led the scoring charge like he has done pretty often without Marc Gasol in the lineup. 28 points on 10 of 17 shooting, 5 3-pointers, 9 rebounds, a steal, and 2 block shots. I mentioned the 5 3-pointers, right? I'll just emphasize it again if I already had. He's been tremendous. We've seen this all year whenever Gasol sits or is out with injury more so. And it's really tough because when Gasol plays, Serge has been more on the peripheries of standard league value, barely floating around as a top 100 asset. So I think people are kind of caught on to that by at this point. I was going to say that this is a sell high opportunity, of course, because this is exactly the same situation the last time that Marc Gasol was out with a hamstring injury. But chances are, if you're in a competitive setting, people are already on to that. They're not going to trust Serge Ibaka's ability to be – they just know that he's not going to be this type of player once Gasol comes back. And though there aren't any real reports out there about the hamstring injury, you figured that his chances of coming back post All-Star break with another week behind him are more likely. So this is the time that you want to try and sell before that news comes down. Toronto has been pretty bad at reporting their injuries, their timetables on the year. I don't think they've given a consistent timetable on a single player at any point. And they've had a lot of injuries. Fred VanVleet, 22 points, 2 rebounds, assist, a steal, 4 3-pointers, and 8 of 19 shooting. Kyle Lowry with the triple-double, 12 points, 12 assists, 11 rebounds, a steal, and 3 3-pointers. Pascal Siakam was fine, 16 points on 6 of 17 shooting, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, and a steal, and a 3-pointer. And then OG Anunoby, who had a really nice ball game or two heading into this one, was having people thinking that he was worth putting back onto teams, but he reminded you again that he is got absolutely no usage right now. 4 points, 2 of 5 shooting from the field, 3 rebounds, a steal, and a block shot. He is just really tough to own, almost impossible to own in head-to-head settings. Just unfortunate because I've liked his game a lot this season. But, yeah, that's really all there is to it. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Ibaka missed his last game with an illness, so Hollis-Jefferson got the small ball center minutes, but he fell back down to his pretty limited role here in only 16 minutes, 4 points. 2 rebounds, 3 assists, and a block shot. And that's really all there is to add on the Raptor side of things. For the Brooklyn side, Caris LeVert led the scoring charge, 20 points on 10 of 20 shooting with 7 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals, and a block shot with 5 turnovers. He, for good reason, people have been pretty down on him in category leagues, but you have to give him credit that he has really stepped up in Kyrie Irving's absence. He's looking a lot healthier these days. He's still not my favorite fantasy guy, but as long as Irving is out, he's doing enough to at least consider putting him on your team. It helps that he didn't take any free throws tonight, too, because he almost always misses a couple. Spencer Dinwiddie added 17 points, 9 assists, and 6 rebounds on 5 of 13 shooting with 2 three-pointers and 5 of 7 shooting from the line. Jarrett Allen only saw 20 minutes. His minutes have been very low recently, a mix of DeAndre Jordan outplaying him. And really, I mean, it's been mostly that. In 20 minutes, he still played really well, 10 points, 13 rebounds, 3 assists, and a block shot on 3 of 6 shooting, 4 of 5 from the line. Jordan, like I mentioned, he played 23 minutes, 7 points, 10 rebounds, 4 assists, a block shot on 3 of 6 shooting himself. Usually it's just these two holding all the center minutes, but in the final 5 minutes, Brooklyn went small with, I think, Wilson Chandler, or I guess Torian Prince, one of those two, playing the 5 for that last 5-minute stretch there. But yeah, on the whole, Jordan has been winning the minute shares over Jared Allen recently, which has capped Allen's upside, but we've seen this all year from him. He's still a standard league player in that amount of time. You just wish that it was more. The real guy that I'm interested in talking about in Brooklyn side, I think, is Torian Prince, who I've talked about a lot on this podcast and a lot on Twitter. Prince in this game, 29 minutes, 2 of 10 shooting from the floor, 1 of 7 from three-point range. He finished with 8 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal. The thing I've always talked about with Prince on this podcast is how important having Kyrie Irving on this team is to his fantasy value, particularly his efficiency. He has been really bad without Kyrie Irving in the lineup. He has been outside the top 230 in 9 category leagues in his last 5 games, and he's shooting 36% on 12 shots per game. That's a huge reason why. The assists and defensive stats have been down as well. He, you know, my little side project is I've been just tracking this guy's field goal percentage when Irving's in the lineup and when he's out of the lineup, and the returns are just always the same. When Irving is there, Torian has a better field goal percentage, and when he has a better field goal percentage, he becomes a standard league player. Not a huge one, like a top 90 guy, but still, that's enough. Generally, his counting stats stay the same, regardless of whether or not Irving is in or out of the lineup. But when Irving's out, his volume goes up, and his percentages go way down. Call it a confidence thing, with defenses more focused on him, as opposed maybe he's a guy who just likes the pressure off of him. I don't know what it is, but exactly, other than it's clear. When Irving is there, Prince is a much better fantasy player. So he's going to start hitting the wire in a few leagues, I imagine. I've already gotten a lot of questions on Twitter about whether or not he should be dropped, so I know that there's at least some of you listening out there that are considering it. I wouldn't blame you, but when Irving comes back into the fold, he is a guy that I would definitely consider picking back up. So that's the Brooklyn side of things. We're going to move right along to the Milwaukee Bucks in the Indiana Pacers after I take this sip of water. Pace. Milwaukee lost this one. 111, a rare loss for Milwaukee. 111 to 118. The Pacers got their first win of the season series. Milwaukee leads a 2-1, which should not be surprising. This is only Milwaukee's 8th loss of the season. No Giannis Antetokounmpo, out for the birth of his child. And even when he sits, Milwaukee's still a really good ball club. So this is just a good win for Indiana, even without Antetokounmpo out there. So, you know, a lot of usage to go around without Antetokounmpo. So there's not a whole lot to look into from a fantasy perspective here. I'll go over the box score, though. Eric Bledsoe had 15 points in this game, 4 of 11 shooting, 6 rebounds, 4 assists and a steal, 5 turnovers, no three-pointers. Perfect 7 of 7 from the line, though. Chris Middleton led the scoring charge of the starters, 17 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal, 4 turnovers, and 3 three-pointers on 6 of 17 shooting. He has been an early-round guy, and that's going to continue. Ersan Ilyasova got the start without Antetokounmpo and scored 12 points, 3 rebounds, and an assist. He only played 19 minutes. I believe he was benched to start the second half for Pat Connaughton, who finished this game with 30 minutes played, but only added 6 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 three-pointers. The guy that Brook Lopez, before we move away from the starters, 12 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals, 4 blocks, and a 3-pointer. Big cash counting night for Brook Lopez, but it obviously wasn't enough. Dante DiVincenzo was the guy who led the scoring charge for this team. 19 points in 30 minutes, 8 of 14 from the field, 3 three-pointers, 8 rebounds, an assist, a steal, and a block. He has been a top 80 player for the last 2 months. 2 months. In fantasy leagues. He's just not going anywhere. He's only owned in 16% of Yahoo leagues, and that's frankly unacceptable, guys. Go fix that. He's a great source of steals, a decent source of rebounds for the sort of smallish forward that he is. Good percentages, or good enough. He's just good. He's a top 80 player in the last 2 months. There's no reason to suspect that that'll change. The points aren't going to be there, so maybe I think that has a lot to do with it, of why he's not very highly owned. But everything else is there. Not a big turnover guy either, so definitely more of a 9-cat darling in my mind. He's still somewhat useful in 8-category leagues, probably somewhere in the top 100. I don't have that exact figure. But top 80 is top 80. That's a dude that should be owned. Indiana side of things, this one's their stuff's a little more interesting as they work Victor Oladipo back into things. I believe this is their first win since Oladipo came back. I think that they were on a 6-game losing streak or something like that. Oladipo, to his credit, he did not take 15 shots in this one and obliterate your field goal percentage. He was decent. 13 points on 5 of 7 shooting, a 3-pointer, 3 rebounds, and 4 assists with 3 turnovers. I think that both Oladipo and the Pacers want him to be that guy. He's their number one option. He's their leader. They want him to take all those shots. But it was clear that that was not leading to wins. I think that the game plan got switched up a little bit, and they relied on some of their sort of the guy. They want to get Oladipo back up to speed, obviously. But I think it's better that he takes less shots at this point and have the ball spread around to these other guys in Indiana. Because, you know, they're a 6-game losing streak's not all that great when you're in a playoff chase. Great analysis, I know. The guy who led the scoring charge in this one is TJ Warren. 35 points on 16 of 19 shooting with a 3-pointer, 7 rebounds, an assist, and 4 steals. He's perfectly back up to speed after being out with that concussion. He's probably going to remain a pretty good scorer, even with Oladipo ramping back up, because they come about their buckets in different ways. Domantas Sabonis was in a little bit of foul trouble, but he still had a decent line. Decent enough, I guess. 15 points on 4 of 15 shooting. He did miss 3 free throws. Missed his 3 three-pointer attempts as well. So he finishes with 15, 8, 4, and no defensive stats. So I retract that. This was a very, very okay line to sort of bad for Sabonis. But he's fine. He's totally fine. You're not worried there. Miles Turner had a game that we have not seen a lot from him this year. 14 points and 10 rebounds. The rebounds in particular, I guess because of the foul trouble, he was able to get under the glass a lot more frequently. He finishes 6 of 13 shooting with 2 three-pointers, an assist, a steal, and 2 block shots. A very welcome sight for Turner owners. Malcolm Brogdon, 17 points, 13 assists, 5 rebounds on 6 of 13 shooting with a 3-pointer. He's been slumping pretty hard recently, so this is also a welcome sign of things. And the big note here is Jeremy Lamb, who he's definitely been getting cut in a lot of formats because of the struggles since Oladipo's returned. He's seen his shot attempts take a dip in a pretty significant way. But I think, like I've maintained when every time we talk about him, every time he's brought up, I think that the role, his move to the bench is going to be good for him in the long run. And this was a really nice ball game from him. 5 of 10 shooting from the field, 13 points, 6 rebounds, an assist, a steal, a block, and 2 three-pointers. That's pretty much what I'm going to be expecting from him in this bench role. He's not going to be taking a ton of shots, but he's going to be taking shots against worse defenders, weaker opponents. That's the key for him. In a situation where he's going to be losing his starting gig, he does have something to gain in the fact that he is the best offensive player coming off the bench for Indiana. There is value in being the sixth man. When T.J. Warren was out, it got a little confusing for a while because Justin Holiday had a much bigger role. He was seeing a lot more minutes, a small forward, and he's still seeing a decent chunk of minutes at 25, like he saw in this game. But he didn't do much. 1 of 3 shooting, 6 points, a rebound, 2 assists, and 2 steals. That's probably going to be closer to the norm for him. If you own him anyway, you're in it for the defensive stats, and he at least got you the 2 steals. But I think the bench move is going to be good for Jeremy Lamb. He's a guy that has a history of posting top 90-ish value in 9-category leagues. And I think that he can do that with the 26 minutes like he saw tonight. So he's a guy that I'm going to try and hold on to and snag in some spots where he's getting dropped. I think there's enough meat on that bone. Next game on the docket. Washington in New York. The Wizards in Madison Square Garden, taking this one 114-96. They lead the season series 2-1. Where do we start here? Well, let's start with Bradley Beal, who led the team with scoring at 30 points on 11 of 23 shooting. 2 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, a block shot, and 2 3-pointers. He is still playing in I'm pissed off that I was snubbed mode, which is a pretty good mode for Beal and the Wizards. Chances, I have to imagine that there's going to be some sort of injury that pops up in the next day or so, right? Like, he's definitely going to make the team if that were to happen. We already saw something like that happen in the Western Conference, which I'll get to a little later tonight, in case you hadn't heard that news. But he's definitely playing like a man who's upset that he was snubbed. Davis Bertans played pretty well off the bench, 16 points, 4 of 9 shooting, 2 3-pointers, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, and a blocked shot. He's been trending a little down recently, but for the most part, you'll take a line like that. Jan Mahimi continues to start and saw 30 minutes with 9 points, 10 rebounds, an assist, a steal, and a block shot. I think a lot of people were expecting that he was going to be a buyout candidate, but with the news of Thomas Bryant's foot cropping up, I think that might have incentivized Washington to just hold on to him because they don't have a ton of options outside him and Mo Wagner. So that kind of sucks, but whatever. It's fine. You're not really touching him in standard leagues. Rui Hachimura continues to get himself back up to speed, but he was pretty eh in this game. 8 points on 3 of 7 shooting, 5 rebounds, assists, and no defensive stats. The guys have I guess before I get to these other guys real quick, Mo Wagner got ejected early on in the fourth quarter here, so he only finished with 17 minutes. 2 of 5 shooting, 6 points, 4 boards, a steal, and a block shot. It wasn't going to be like the lines that we had seen from him in the previous game where he ramped himself all the way up to 26 minutes, but you figure he probably would have broke 20, maybe get to like 22 or something had he not gotten ejected. I didn't see what happened, but I don't think it was like a fight or anything. I think he just got 2 technical fouls throughout the course of the game and he got tossed. Still a guy that I'm interested in as long as Bryant is out. He's a guy who was in November, his first 20 games of the season, he was about a top 100 player in just 20 minutes a game. So you can tell that there's a lot of production to be had there if he gets anything over that, which is quite possible. The two guys, though, that we're focused on is the point guard situation here, Ish Smith and Shabazz Napier. Napier was a guy that I was very interested in post-trade deadline because I like his fantasy game. I like how he plays in an up-tempo offense like the one that Washington runs. Good source of points, threes, dimes, but he's been sort of capped at 19 minutes through his first 4 games. He's, to be a little more specific, he's been averaging 10 points, 1.8 three-pointers, 2.5 rebounds, 3.8 assists, and a steal on 44% shooting and 90% shooting from the line. Also 2.3 turnovers per game. That's actually pretty good stuff for that amount of time. 19 minutes in that sort of production is that generally that would get you to standard league value, but the 2.3 turnovers he's averaging is kind of keeping him down closer to the outside the top 150, which is where he currently sits during that stretch. But I think that's to be expected. He's running point in a high-tempo offense with a team he's never played for before. So, yeah, he's going to turn the ball over pretty frequently while he's learning the ropes here. It's the reason he's capped at 19 minutes. I still like his long-term outlook, but it's going to take a little time, I think, before he can supplant Ish Smith in the starting lineup. Ish, for his part, has been averaging 28 minutes a game since the deadline as the starting point guard. Tonight, by the way, he scored 8 points on 4 of 9 shooting with 4 rebounds, 3 assists, steal, and a block shot. Shabazz Napier, I don't think I mentioned his line from tonight, in 19 minutes, he scored 5 points on 2 of 3 shooting, 3 rebounds, 4 assists, and a steal. But back to the general conversation about these two point guards, Ish Smith has had some value in the assist department, averaging close to 6 a game over his last 4. But he's not doing a lot to make me feel confident in his long-term outlook. He's averaging a block and a steal per game. The block is definitely an anomaly. I know he got another one tonight, but that's just not going to hold up. He hasn't attempted any free throws, and that's generally a negative for him. He's a sub-70% shooter, I believe, on the season, which is pretty bad for a point guard. He's just, and he doesn't take a whole lot of threes. He certainly doesn't make a lot of them. So he is the starting point guard out of necessity. It just makes the most sense. He knows the system, and he isn't a bad distributor. His playmaking ability is definitely keeping him in that high-minute role. But by all accounts, Shabazz Napier definitely has the more friendly game. I'm still pretty high on him. He's not a guy that I, you know, he's probably not worth starting in roto leagues until we see the minutes start trending up, because he's pretty much capped at 19 to 20. But once they do, I think he's going to take off. Everything I'm seeing so far indicates to me that he's a really good fit for this team, statistically speaking, and he could be a guy that'd be very helpful for the fantasy playoffs down the stretch. So yeah, I'm definitely interested in him still. Let's move on to New York, and there's not going to be a whole lot to say here, so this will be nice and quick. Julius Randle led the scoring charge at 21 points, 9 of 18 shooting, 1 three-pointer, 13 rebounds, an assist, no steals, and a block shot. Elfrid Payton continues to play really, really well, 19 points on 6 of 10 shooting with a three-pointer, 4 rebounds, 8 assists, and 5 steals. He missed his 3 free throws in this one. That's really his biggest negative, aside as well as the lack of three-pointers. But very similar to Lonzo Ball, kind of like a cheaper Lonzo Ball, the counting stuff for him has been pretty ridiculous over his last month or so. So he's definitely a guy that's worth holding on to in standard settings. RJ Barrett is sort of getting himself back up to speed, if you could call it that. He's taking his shots again, 5 of 16 shooting from the field, 16 points, 5 rebounds, no assists, no defensive stats, 2 turnovers, no thank you. In any format, even points leagues, you could do better. Reggie Bullock continues to start at small forward. He saw 24 minutes in this game, took 12 shots, but only made 2. 5 points, 2 rebounds, a steal, and a 3-pointer. He's probably going to continue to start because of the floor spacing. The Knicks are definitely, of all the, they want to continue to play the style that they've been playing all year. Marcus Morris was hitting 2.5 threes per game. So there's a role for Reggie Bullock there, but not a fantasy useful one. The interesting note here is Mo Harkless, who made his Knicks debut tonight. He wasn't able to get onto the floor for his first few games with New York due to illness and jet lag, I guess. And I think that was the official report on that one. He played 25 minutes, shot 2 of 7 from the floor, 4 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal. It's tough to imagine that he gets higher than these minutes out moving forward. Although, I mean, it's somewhat encouraging that he played 25 right out the gate. But this is kind of close to the minutes that he was seeing in Clipperland. I think he was averaging about 22 per game before he got to New York. So, yeah, there's not a lot to be excited about there. I don't think he's going to crack the starting lineup because of the floor spacing issues. It bothers me to no end that Kevin Knox is getting no play at all. I can't emphasize it enough. He's too young to be getting doghoused like this, you know, for a team going nowhere. I'm not going to beat this dead horse. I hate the Knicks. I hate them so much. Mitchell Robinson only played 18 minutes off the bench, 5 of 6 shooting, 11 points, 8 rebounds, an assist and a block shot. He refuses to let this team ruin his fantasy value. He's still a standard league guy, top 50 player. And I hope that something changes soon. It's not all the coaching staff for New York. Obviously, Mitchell Robinson has his issues with the fouls. But come on, man. Reggie Bullock, Kevin Knox can at least give you the impression that he can try and space the floor. I know that he can score. Just throw him out there already. This is by no means making a fantasy appeal either. I just let the young guys play. Kevin Knox is not going to be a fantasy player, even if he starts. But just let him play. It's just gross. Move on to the next game here. Trailblazers and Memphis Grizzlies. This is actually Grizzlies won this one 111-104. This is actually the first meeting between these teams, which is kind of rare for an intra-conference matchup. We're in the middle of February, and they had yet to play each other. But Memphis now leads the season series 1-0. Starting on the Blazers side of things, and the obvious news that we have to start off with the top here is that Damian Lillard left this game towards the end of the fourth quarter with a strained groin. He's set for an MRI tomorrow, and he's already basically ruled himself out for the All-Star game. So, I mean, look, the All-Star game is this weekend, so obviously it's enough to where Lillard felt that he was going to miss a few games anyhow. Certainly, it's serious enough to where he doesn't feel comfortable playing in an exhibition game, which is totally understandable. He's been having his best season ever, and there's no reason to derail that by playing hurt. We'll await the news on that, see how long this timetable could be. He's essentially got a full week of recovery time, so that's decent. If he sits and misses time, Anthony Simons is likely going to step into the starting lineup. He's going to get a lot more shot attempts. CJ McCollum is going to be playing a lot more point guard, and he's going to be doing a lot more distributing. And Gary Trent Jr., who we all just saw go on a pretty nice hot stretch without Simons, who was out for a couple of games with a concussion, he could step into some fringy fantasy value as well, though I'm not as confident in him just because the fantasy value that he saw was coming off of really crazy, unsustainable shooting from the field. But he will be the only guy offensively coming off the bench for the Blazers, so there will be a role for him there without Lillard. Really, shot attempts are going to be going around everywhere. Carmelo is going to see a lot more. Trevor Ariza is going to see a lot more. But if you're looking for an ad, it's probably Simons. Maybe Trent. Most likely not either, because they don't really have that. They don't really have a fantasy-friendly game. Anyway, let's get into the stats here. We'll start with Lillard, who did play 37 minutes, 20 points, 10 assists, 5 rebounds, a steal, and 2 three-pointers on 7 of 19 shooting. CJ McCollum on 25 shots only scored 23 points, 9 of 25 from the floor, 3 three-pointers, 3 rebounds, 5 assists, and a steal. Hassan Whiteside actually got himself ejected in the last seconds of this game because he's an idiot. 16 points, 11 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal. I mean, the ejection's not enough to get him suspended, but I mean, why? Why are you getting? He got up in some dude's face towards the end of the game. I think it was JV's. Because, I don't know, there was some contact on a putback attempt. You're losing the game, man. Just shut up. Carmelo Anthony was horrible from the field. 1 of 15 shooting. He scored 5 points but did grab 15 rebounds. Had a steal and a block shot. Trevor Ariza was fine. 4 of 11 shooting. 12 points. 6 rebounds, an assist, and 2 steals and a block shot. And I think I said 2 three-pointers. I feel like I've been forgetting the three-pointers in these analysis, so please let me know. Please let me know on Twitter if that's been the case in my breakdown. But yeah, Ariza's been fine on the whole since joining the Blazers. He trades off really good games with pretty games, and on the whole, in a roto setting, that would probably get you some decent value. But in head to head, you probably are sick of the headache at this point if you own him. For the Grizzlies side of things, and this one's much more interesting. We're watching a couple of guys here, but I'll get to them towards the end of this setup here. We'll start with Brandon Clark, who led the scoring charge off the bench. 12 of 14 shooting from the floor, 27 points, 6 rebounds, 1 assist, 2 steals, and a block shot. He's trucking along as a late to mid-round option. Ja Morant had 20 points on 23 shots. 5 rebounds, 9 assists in a steal. He's still coming on. He's working through the rookie wall, but the runaway rookie of the year guy continues to just run away with it. I know Zion, but come on. It's going to be Ja. Jonas Valanciunas was great. 12 points on 5 of 11 shooting, 18 rebounds, 2 assists, and 3 block shots. And Jaren Jackson Jr. fought through foul trouble, 8 points, 1 of 6 shooting, 1 three-pointer, 5 rebounds, a steal, 3 blocks, and an assist. The two guys that we need to talk about here are De'Anthony Melton and Kyle Anderson. We'll start with Anderson, who has been in the starting lineup following the Jay Crowder trade. Excuse me. He played 26 minutes in this game with 6 points, 9 rebounds, an assist, a steal, and a block on 3 of 4 shooting from the field. Since the trade deadline, he's been very fringy, ranked 116 in 9 category leagues, but he's playing 28 minutes a night, averaging 9 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, 0.7 steals, and 0.3 blocks on very high field goal percentage, 65%, and perfect from the free throw line, but he's not even taking 1 a game, so that doesn't really matter. Slow-mo has generally been – I've actually liked his fantasy game over the years, and there's definitely stretches last season where he was pretty useful. He was getting a little more involved in the playmaking side of things. He hasn't been doing all that much this season. I think that Ja Morant has commanded the ball and his hands a little bit more, and Kyle Anderson's mostly been operating as just kind of a low post. Like, he's just doing a lot of his dirty work inside, which is why his field goal percentage is so high and why he's averaging so many rebounds. He's just playing very close to the rim. And there is value in that. The rebounds are nice. I know he's got some positional versatility, at least on Yahoo. I think he plays 3 different positions, which is nice. But he won't give you any threes. And the defensive stats are sort of not there. He's generally a better steals guy than he has been in these last handful of starts. But they haven't really been there for him. All this is to say, he's definitely on my radar. He's on my watch lists, but he's not doing enough yet to warrant ownership in standard settings. I'd like to see the assists sort of come up a little bit more, see if he can get involved in the playmaking, I'm not super confident in at this point, but there is some value here, if not just very little. He's just not worth the ad yet, but the opportunity is there for him in droves. I don't see him getting anything less than 26 minutes a night. So keep your eye out on him. If you need the rebounds on decent field goal percentage shooting, that's not typically the stuff that he's really good at getting you at, but he's doing it right now, so there's use for that on your team. The guy I'm mostly interested in is De'Anthony Melton, though, who has not really been the same since he suffered a hand injury before the trade deadline. He was on a nice run where he was seeing close to 25 minutes a night, and he was collecting defensive stats and rebounds and assists and all this really juicy stuff that you love. But he's been really bad since the trade deadline. He's seen a lot of minutes, which is really good, and he's seen a lot of shots, which is good, but it's been off for him. That changed a little bit tonight, though. 4-7 shooting from the field in 26 minutes, 12 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, with a 3-pointer and no defensive stats, and 3 turnovers. There's still some rust there, but I'm still holding on to him. I'm still recommending that everyone be aware of him because we've seen his body of work on the season has indicated that he has some top 80 to top 70 potential in a mid 20 minute role that he's pretty much locked into the rest of the way. I think the All-Star break will be really good for him to sort of work out the kinks with his hand. The team wants him to shoot. They clearly desire him to be involved in their offense. The defensive stats will come back for him. He has one of the best steal rates in the entire NBA. I am more confident in that than anything else about his game. He should be owned. He's going to be really good down the stretch. I really believe that. And that's not much of a conversation to be had on that one, but I do believe that. He should be on your radar. He should be on your team if you can afford to sit on him. Because once he starts going off, it's going to be too late to get him. All right, we got 5 more games to get through here. I think we're making better time than we did last week. So good on me. Gonna give myself a nice little pat on the back. If you want to give me a nice little pat on the back, go follow me on Twitter at Alan Srochi, A-L-A-N-S-R-O-C-H-I. Shameless plug. There's no one here to stop me, though. It's the perks of doing a podcast solo. Plug myself in. Talk about the Atlanta Hawks for way longer than anyone wants to listen to. Next game on the docket, the Charlotte Hornets and the Minnesota Timberwolves. There was two out-of-conference games tonight. This was one of them. Charlotte wins this one 115-108. They split the season series 1-1. This game missed a lot of critical players. We'll start with the Hornets side of things, who missed Terry Rozier and Cody Zeller. I don't believe they ever disclosed why he missed this game. Terry Rozier was sort of a close to game time scratch because of a left knee issue. So we'll wait to hear more word on that one. But without Rozier, there was a lot more shots to go around. We'll start with Devontae Graham, who led the charge with 28 points. 9 of 20 shooting, 5 of 11 from the three-point line, 4 rebounds, 8 assists, no defensive stats, and 4 turnovers. He continues to do a lot of things really well as a top 75 type of player, one of the best assists and three-point guys in the NBA. Bismack Biyombo got the start in place of Cody Zeller, 14 points, 10 rebounds, 2 assists, and a block shot on 6 of 8 shooting. This is one of the better lines you will see from Biyombo, and I'm not interested. I'm not buying. I'm not into it. What else is worth talking about? Miles Bridges continues to have a late season turnaround here. 20 points on 6 of 16 shooting, 3 three-pointers, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, and a block shot. I mentioned the 3 three-pointers. Come on. The defensive stat turnaround is the biggest thing that I'm excited for him, because that was sort of what floated his value towards the end of last season. They've been mostly absent for him on the year. The offense is also nice too, but you really want him because of the 1-1-1 potential. The guy that's definitely worth taking a moment on here is Malik Monk, who's been on a bit of a tear over his last. Let's just look at what he's done in February. I believe he's played 6 games in February, and he's been 104-9 cat during that stretch. 29 minutes per game. These are his averages. Before I get into his averages for the month. Tonight, he scored 25 points on 10 of 20 shooting, 3 three-pointers, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal, and 2 block shots. A very full 9-cat line for him. 3 turnovers. He had 3 turnovers as well. I believe this was a season high in shot attempts for him, so obviously he is a big beneficiary of Terry Rozier's absence. But let's take a look at what he's done over the last month, because he's been playing well before this game. 29 minutes per game through February so far, 17 points per game, 2 threes, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 0.8 steals, 0.8 blocks on 48% shooting from the field on 13 attempts, and 85% from the line on 2 attempts. That's really good for him. He's been a rather inconsistent sort of gunner type of player through his career so far. This is probably the best stretch that he's had as a professional. And I've been sort of, because I feel like I know what his game is, it's similar to Kevin Porter Jr., honestly, in that he's just a very he's a streaky shooter who does not provide a lot more outside of scoring and three-pointers. So obviously you want to ride him when he's hot, but you want to know if there's any sort of rest-of-season potential here. And I don't have a great answer on that one. It's probably not why you're listening to me. You want me to have some definitive stances here, but I don't know. It's definitely interesting to see what he's doing right now. It sucks that this is sort of coming with a week-long layoff now heading into the All-Star break. You don't, with a guy like him, a streaky shooter, you don't want him to have a moment to cool off, and that's absolutely what this deadline, this week-long period is set to give him. But the Hornets don't have any reason to not keep feeding him shots. He's not going to hit 48% of his looks, that's for sure. So you can expect the field goal percent and the points to come down, which could put him from like a top 100 guy to a top 120 guy. But that's still a lot better than like the, what, outside of top 190 or 200 that he was playing at before this. So I'm okay with taking a flyer on him, but I'm not super confident that this is something that's going to last for the rest of the season. I think there are better options floating out there, particularly in 9-category settings. In fact, we have a lot to get to for the Timberwolves side of things, and we're gonna have to take some time on this one because there's a lot of guys worth talking about and a lot of news to dissect here. Timberwolves in this game, previous around the same time that Rozier got scratched, Karl-Anthony Towns was ruled out with a wrist injury that was disclosed in some MRI that was performed earlier today. This is an injury that apparently he had suffered sometime in January that I guess was mostly undisclosed until this moment. And I'm not sure what the next step is here. We don't know the severity of the injury. We just know that it exists. An MRI confirmed that it exists. I don't know what it is, but this could keep him out for some time, or maybe it couldn't. Again, it's unclear. We have not gotten any confirmation here, but this creates – we already had a ton of questions about what was going on in Minnesota in their new-look team from a fantasy perspective, and this jumbles things up tremendously. Let's start with the lines. D'Angelo Russell let's start with Malik Beasley, who led the scoring charge. 28 points on 11 of 25 shooting, 5 three-pointers, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, and no defensive stats. He's been tremendous in his first 3 games. Of course, though, that they've also come with D'Angelo Russell missing 1 game and now Karl-Anthony Towns missing 1 game. For all intents and purposes, Malik Beasley is the third option offensively on this team. But in 2 of his first 3 games, he's been the second option to first option offensively, debatably. And he's been really, really good. He's averaged 22 points through his first 3 games, 4.7 three-pointers, 6.7 rebounds, 3 assists on 42% shooting from the floor and 80% from the line. We'll circle back to him when I get through the rest of his lines here. Juancho Hernan Gomez played 38 minutes starting as the power forward slash center, 16 points, 12 rebounds, a steal and a block and a three-pointer. All accounts a really good line out of him. James Johnson got the fill-in start. He jumped into the starting lineup in place of Karl-Anthony Towns. You could argue that he was the small ball center in this one. He scored 5 points on 2 of 8 shooting, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals, and 3 blocks. He was this close to putting up a 5-by-5 jumping into the starting lineup. Also added a 3-pointer. Very, very appealing stat line out of him. Very reminiscent of what he was a couple of seasons ago in Miami. Again, we will circle back to him as well. I need to touch on 2 more guys. Josh Okogie in 30 minutes scored 9 points on 4 of 10 shooting from the floor, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals. And then Naz Reid, who I've mentioned on this podcast before, and I've definitely mentioned him on Twitter as a guy that I am super interested in. He played 22 minutes, scored 12 points, had 6 rebounds, and had a steal and a block shot. He's essentially the only center on this roster now without Karl-Anthony Towns and with Amari Spellman figures to being bought out. Okay. So a lot of questions that need to be answered. First, Malik Beasley should be owned in standard leagues, right? I think we all knew that already. I think for the most part, he is. Last I checked, he's 48% owned in Yahoo leagues. That should come up, especially after a game like tonight. Regardless of whether or how long Karl-Anthony Towns is out, he's going to see enough shots to do what he does best, which is they're going to want him to shoot a lot of threes. They'll have him split some playmaking duties with D'Angelo Russell, who is not a pure point guard by trait. Not like Malik Beasley is either, but he's talented enough to do stuff with the ball in his hands. So he's going to get some opportunities to get some assists here and there. He's athletic. He's all over the floor. I think that he wants to play. He's clearly bringing a lot of energy here. He's excited to be in a situation where he can really show his stuff. There's going to be – I'm not going to say that he's like – I don't want to blow expectations out of the water here. I think that he's going to be like a top 80 guy. I think that's fair valuation for him. But if Towns misses a lot of time, that could be totally off. I mean, he could lead the team in scoring, frankly. He definitely has the want to do so. So easy guy right there. He should be owned everywhere. Juancho Hernan Gomez has been starting ever since he was traded here to Minnesota. He's averaging in his time in Minnesota. I have the numbers here. He's been averaging 30 minutes a game, 15.6 rebounds, 2 3-pointers, an assist, 1.3 assists, 0.7 steals, and 0.3 blocks on 42% shooting in 69 from the field and 69% from the line. He's been just pretty meh. He's getting a lot of playing time, and he's scoring and rebounding and hitting threes. That's what Minnesota wants from him, right? But, you know, the defensive stuff has never been a huge part of Wancho's game, and it doesn't look like that's going to be really getting into play here. I mean, he played really well tonight, but he's not going to be able to get these cash counters like this on most situations. There's a role for him with this type of stat line, but this is not standard league stuff for the most part. There's not enough meat on the bone. This is sort of closer to, I'd say, top 150 range than I would say is close to top 110 to 100 stuff. It's early, but by all accounts, it's going to be tough for me to see where he goes from here, because he's not he's never been a huge percentage guy, which is if he's just scoring points and hitting threes and grabbing rebounds for you, you need him to be good in at least one of those two percentages. And I don't think he's going to be good in either of them for you. So that's the real limiting factor here for Wancho. James Johnson, now, he had some interest before Karl-Anthony Towns went out with this wrist injury, because he was seeing, I think, close to 25 minutes off the bench. And we know his history. We know his stat set capabilities. He's been pretty, you know, out of shape and malcontent over the last season and a half or so, but he's got a real chance now to make a dent. And tonight showed you exactly what he's capable of. You don't need him to score points to be an effective fantasy guy. This is pretty crazy stuff from him. And of course, it came against a bad Charlotte Hornets team, so I'm going to temper my expectations a little bit here. But I'm absolutely intrigued in his ability to give you these cash counters with the steals and the blocks and the threes. And I like the idea of him. I think that this is actually decent personnel for him to get back to doing some playmaking stuff, which was, in my mind, the thing that really made him a decent fantasy asset those couple seasons ago. D'Angelo, like I said, D'Angelo Russell, he'll get you assists, but he makes his money by scoring. He's not a playmaker by trade. I think that there is a role for James Johnson, whatever position he's playing on the floor. I think that there's a possibility here that he could get into three and a half to four-ish assists a game if he's seeing this type of run. That's not nothing. Even if Karl-Anthony Towns comes back, Jordan McLaughlin's the only other point guard on the roster. James Johnson, they could implement him in a Draymond Green type of ish type of role. He's basically got like a poor man's Draymond fantasy game in a lot of ways. So he's definitely interesting, especially as we await this Karl-Anthony Towns news. I think he's must add in standard leagues if Karl-Anthony Towns is out for any extended period of time. And the really interesting guy here is Naz Reid for me personally. I've talked about him before on this podcast. I think he's got a very tantalizing fantasy game. He's shown so far, and he's a high energy rebounder, steals, blocks, and threes. He's got opportunity for sure here. His per 36s are nuts. If he's seen 20 minutes a night, he has value. I think he has value. He really does. I'm super intrigued by him, only if Karl-Anthony Towns misses time. He's less intriguing if Towns is back by the All-Star break, because at that point, he's probably only limited to 15 minutes a night. And even though he could do enough, honestly, he could do enough to give you deep league value. You can't trust the guy getting that low amount of playing time. That's like Boban Marjanovic numbers. So I know I spent a lot of time here. We'll wrap it up like this. The pickups, I think, until we know more, if you're making ads tonight, your priorities should go Malik Beasley 1, James Johnson 2, Naz Reid 3, and why do I keep calling him Juan? Wancho Hernan Gomez, 4. I think that the first three have fantasy stat sets that make sense, and they have roles that will allow them to utilize those stat sets. Naz Reid would be higher if I knew that Karl-Anthony Towns was out for, I don't know, say 3 weeks today, I'd take Naz Reid over James Johnson. Maybe call me a little foolish for that. He's an undrafted rookie, but he's the only center on the roster. There are going to be times where they're going to have to deploy him, and he can get you fantasy value in 20 minutes. James Johnson is a little bit more of an older asset who has had a shaky couple of seasons. Even though he, in that scenario with Towns out, I do think that he'd be worth owning as well, but I like Naz Reid for the upside more. So, again, Beasley, obvious number one, James Johnson, two, Naz Reid, three, and Wancho, four. I think that Naz Reid becomes a must-add if Karl-Anthony Towns is sidelined for a while. Beasley and James Johnson, though, are the two safest adds to make. Okay. Sacramento in Dallas. We'll move along here for our last four games. Dallas won this one, 130-111. They have I actually don't know what the season series is on this one. I did not write that one down. Damn. I was so close. Buddy Hield. We'll start with Buddy Hield. He scored 22 points on 8 of 21 shooting off the bench, led the scoring charge for the Kings. 31 minutes played. 4 3-pointers, 9 assists, a rebound, and a steal. This is, I guess, just a permanent situation for Bogdan Bogdanovic, who is the starter. He scored 6 points, had 4 rebounds, 2 assists, no defensive stats, and a 3-pointer in 23 minutes. De'Aaron Fox scored 16 points with 3 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal, and a block on 5 of 16 shooting, 6 of 8 from the line. Corey Joseph was in the starting lineup for this one, and I got to be honest, I'm not sure. I guess they, oh, well, yeah, okay. So the Kings went small, I guess, to counter the Mavs, who, oh, I guess they just wanted to go against the Mavs, who just did not, have not been deferring to their bigs for the most part. It's just been a Kristaps Porzingis big man situation with a little bit of Maxi Kleba here and there. So Joseph got the start, probably at shooting guard here, 9 points, 3 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal, and a block. I am not interested in him starting. I'm not interested in him if he's playing 35 minutes a game. He is not a fantasy guy. Harrison Barnes is another guy who's not a fantasy guy, who had a really nice game in his last one, but predictably fell back down to earth in this one. 6 points on 2 of 7 shooting, 4 rebounds, 7 assists. Sorry, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, no defensive stats. No, thank you. Nalancia Bjelica had 10 points on 3 of 8 shooting with 2 3-pointers, 7 rebounds, and nothing much else. This is a pretty rough night fantasy-wise for the Kings, but Bjelica obviously is a guy who should be owned in every setting. He already is. I don't, you know, he shouldn't be on any wires. The injury situation with Marvin Bagley and Rashawn Holmes is not good. And though Holmes is worth holding on to for when the playoffs come around, Bjelica is just, he's cemented himself into a mid to early round type player on the year. And I'm dropping Marvin Bagley, by the way. He hasn't done enough to prove that he's actually a fantasy good player. Ugh, that was a poorly phrased sentence, but you know what I mean. Yeah, he had a nice stretch towards the end of last season where he was averaging a double-double with like a block and a half in his last few games. But he, even during that stretch, he was just a top 80 player. His free throws percentage is not there. The assists are not really there. The steals aren't there. The threes aren't there. There's not enough there. When he was healthy, he hasn't been healthy all year. And he expressed in an interview recently, when asked if he was anticipating coming back, he wasn't able to give a definitive answer. That should tell you everything you need to know. He's a young dude in his second season, and he wasn't able to say, yeah, I'm coming back. He said, I don't know. He wants to, but he doesn't know. That tells me everything I need to know. He is not, he's just not going to help your team. I'm not stashing him. I'm leaving him on the wire. To the Mavs side of things, and I also have I have a lot of curt responses to a lot of Mavs-related fantasy questions, as I did with the Kings, which we'll get to in a second here. Luka Doncic returned from, I think it was like, what, six or seven game absence with his ankle injury, 33 points, 12 rebounds, 8 assists, 10 of 18 shooting with 3 3-pointers and 10 of 12 from the line. Welcome back, Luka. Jalen Brunson stayed in the starting lineup for some reason, but didn't do all that much. He only played 14 minutes. 5 points, 2 assists, nothing else. He's a safe, firm drop in every setting. Kristaps Porzingis continues to play really well. 27 points on 11 of 16 shooting, 2 3-pointers, 13 rebounds, 5 assists, and 3 blocks. I assume this has everything to do with the Kings not having a reasonable guy to throw at the Mavs. Their small ball lineup did not work in this one. Dorian Finney-Smith was very quiet, 5 points in 22 minutes on 2 of 4 shooting, 6 rebounds, an assist, and a block shot. Not interested. Haven't been interested all year, just not enough there. Tim Hardaway Jr. is another guy I'm not interested in, and we all know the deal with him. 19 points on 7 of 14 shooting, 5 3-pointers, 3 rebounds, 6 assists, and a steal. 2 inconsistent. The only guy that's worth talking about, well, I guess I'll mention this line too. Seth Curry played 34 minutes on 7 of 10 shooting, probably to match up with the small lineups that the Kings were rolling out there, and he was good. 18 points, 3 rebounds, and 6 assists on 3 of 3 from the 3-point line. And nothing, much ado about nothing there. Maxi Kleba is the only guy that have been somewhat interested in, but he has been fading of late. He only saw 19 minutes in this game, took 5 shots, scored 6 points, had a rebound and 2 block shots. He's basically a block specialist at this point with nothing else. We know that he has a very fantasy-friendly game when given the playing time, but I do the pickups articles for HoopBall on the website for the premium side. I do about 2 a week, and I write about the Mavericks pretty much every night. I've been covering this team all year, and I can't stand any of their fantasy options. Rick Carlisle is a fantastic coach, but he is a horrible fantasy guy. He does not like the fantasy community. Very Eric Spoelstra in that respect. Those two really good coaches hate. Absolutely hate fantasy teams. There's nothing consistent about these rotations to make me trust any role player, any player that's not Luka Doncic or Kristaps Porzingis for this team. The minutes are inconsistent. The roles differ and change. D'Lon Wright is a guy who he has the fantasy stat set that we all like, but his role has been anything but consistent all year long. And even when he has had a consistent role of late, he's done nothing with it. I guess I should mention his stat line tonight, 26 minutes, 1 of 5 shooting from the floor, 6 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and a block shot and a 3-pointer. That's fine. I'm not adding him. I don't think you are either. This argument is probably one that has already been spoken to death enough, and I don't even need to say it. But yes, there's no Mavericks on this team that I care about outside the 2 stars. Next game, Golden State Warriors and the Phoenix Suns. The Suns win this one 112-106. They lead the season series 2-1 over the Warriors. We have to start, of course, with Marquese Chris, who has become, I know at the top of the show I said that Christian Wood was the biggest winner of the deadline. He might be 1A to Marquese Chris being 1B. Because Chris, with all these other, you know, Warriors being shipped out of town, he is completely uncontested to the starting center role. And he is lighting the world on fire. 31 minutes in this game, 7 of 11 from the field, 18 points, 12 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 block shots, 4 of 6 from the line. He has been playing inside the top 30 in February. Yeah, I believe that's 6 or 7 games. That's crazy stuff. He's basically playing like Mitchell Robinson, who isn't in foul trouble and has a 3-point shot. That's an insane comparison I just made, but it's not inaccurate. He looks like a totally different player. I actually watched him the other night. I caught the ABC game where he put up 20 points in the first half. That's some confidence right there that he never, ever showed in Phoenix. Actually, it just dawned on me as I'm speaking about him right now that this is sort of a revenge game for him, and he absolutely played his butt off here. Huge trade deadline winner. Super happy that he's on my team in a very competitive league. Mitchell Robinson won me the championship last season, and Marquese Chris could very well be that guy for me this year. He's that good, guys. Congrats if you were able to get him before this all really started heating up for him. Andrew Wiggins is starting to look pretty good, too, and fitting in with the Warriors system. 27 points on 9 of 14 shooting, 3 of 4 from 3-point land, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, and 4 block shots. Really good stuff out of him. Draymond Green was, you know, pretty much what we expect out of him at this stage with this team right now. 6 points on 2 of 5 shooting, 6 rebounds, 9 assists, and a steal. Jordan Poole got the start at point guard. I think the point guard duties were split between Draymond and Andrew Wiggins in this one. But Poole's been coming on recently. I think he's impressed the coaching staff with his decent play of late. 12 points on 4 of 12 shooting, two three-pointers, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal. Not a fantasy guy in any format, but he is going to be soaking up a lot of minutes moving forward here at the expense of Kai Bowman in particular, who only saw 4 minutes off the bench. And I was saying this too, that I always thought that Bowman had a lot more to worry about with Draymond Green than he did with D'Angelo Russell, because Draymond, like I mentioned with D'Angelo when we're talking about the Wolves, he plays point guard, but the point guard for this team was always Draymond. He's the playmaker. That's still the case, and Bowman doesn't have that avenue. And for whatever reason, Jeremy Pargo, this 33-year-old Jeremy Pargo, who hasn't played in the NBA since 2013, has a contract and played 20 minutes over him in this game. For the record, 15 points on 6 of 11 shooting, 2 assists and a rebound for Pargo. So that's the nail in the coffin for Kai Bowman. He's a drop for any team that picked him up. And then Eric Pascal, 27 minutes, 12 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, no defensive stats, and I don't have a lot more to say about that. He's fine. Oh, and Damian Lee, 10 points on 4 of 10 shooting, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, and 3 steals. He's going to have a decent enough role the rest of the way, unless, of course, Steph Curry comes back. He'll probably, if Curry comes back into the fold, pretty much all of these no-name Warriors guys outside of Marquese Chris are going to lose all their value. So keep your eye on that, because, I mean, look, guys, he's targeting a March 1st return. We're about to take a week off with the All-Star break. We're talking maybe 5 more games before that potential Curry return happens. So ride Damian Lee while you can, but if that Curry return does happen, Lee's going to lose pretty much all his value, I believe. Suns side of things, DeAndre Ayton missed his 2nd straight game with an ankle injury. Anyone's guess how long he's out? Any indication as to how worried the Suns are about that? They signed Jonah Bolden, who was just cut by the Sixers, to a 10-day contract. So, yeah. Of course, they're also missing Aaron Baines and Frank Kaminsky for indefinite periods of time. So do with that as you will. Devin Booker, 27 points in 37 minutes on 8 of 22 shooting. 2 three-pointers, 9 of 9 from the line. 5 rebounds, 8 assists, 2 steals, and a block shot. With Damian Lillard missing All-Star weekend, it seems pretty much like a foregone conclusion that Booker is going to make his first All-Star game. So congrats to him for that. I'm sure he's still got a fire lit under his ass, because being an injury replacement is not exactly the same thing. You still have the snub vibe going on there. Kelly Oubre Jr. was in this game, 15 points on 5 of 16 shooting, 3 three-pointers, 6 rebounds, and nothing else of note. Mikal Bridges continues to play really well now that he's got this locked down 30-minute role. 14 points, 2 rebounds, an assist, 3 steals, a block, and 2 three-pointers. Ricky Rubio, he's been looking better as of late. He's really struggled over the last month, I think playing through some ankle injuries, so this break is definitely going to help him a good deal. 9 points on 4 of 8 shooting, 9 assists, 5 rebounds, 2 steals, and 5 turnovers. Serviceable stuff there. And that's about it. Suns are a boring fantasy team. No, I'm not interested in adding Jonah Bolden. He's on a 10-day contract. He's really just there so that the Suns don't get clobbered on the inside on a given night, every given night. So we have 2 more games to get to here. And all right, and away we go. Miami Heat and the Utah Jazz. Miami loses this one in Utah 101, Jazz 116. They split the season series 1-1. We'll start with Jimmy Butler, who's working his way back from that shoulder injury that he missed a couple of games with. 25 points on 10 of 21 shooting, 8 rebounds, an assist, and that was kind of it. 4 turnovers as well. Derrick Jones Jr. Stayed in the starting lineup but didn't do anything. 24 minutes, no shot attempts, which is weird. 2 rebounds, 2 steals, and a block shot. He looked like he was in a good deal of foul trouble in this game, but the no shots is pretty surprising. Absolutely zero offensive impact out there. Duncan Robinson put up an incredibly Duncan Robinson-like 9, 6 of 13 from the floor, 6 of 13 from three-point land, 18 points, 3 assists, a rebound, and a steal. He slumped pretty hard over January, but he's definitely been picking things back up over his last handful of ball games. Been a really nice three-point shooter on this season, the best three-point specialist in fantasy hoops, if I might add. By that, I mean, like, of guys that really hold – that are only really good at shooting threes. I'm not saying he's the best three-point shooter, though there's an argument to be made that he's among the best this year based off the efficiency. Names that we're really watching this one were new additions, Jay Crowder and Gore and Andre Iguodala, where their roles would be with Butler around. Crowder, in 25 minutes off the bench, still played decent, 15 points, 3 rebounds, an assist, and a steal, and 3 three-pointers. A pretty far cry from the 2 games that he started out his career with the Heat with. But, I mean, I'm not going to pretend like this isn't a decent line. Derrick Jones Jr. being in foul trouble definitely helps contribute to him getting this level of work. I'm not confident because I've mentioned so many times before that Eric Spoelstra, I just mentioned with my Mavs, going over the Mavs, that these Spoelstra rotations can change on a whim, and he's never had a roster that is easier to do that with all these very switchable, interchangeable forwards, Jay Crowder, Derrick Jones Jr., Andre Iguodala, Kelly Olynyk, Solomon Hill, who didn't play, but you get the deal. Jimmy Butler, all these guys are relatively the same type of player in terms of their size and their skill sets. So the minutes can very easily be taken here and there. Crowder's fine to play right now. I think that there are a lot more interesting guys out there and a lot safer guys out there that you could be making ads on. But, I mean, he's had his first 3 games in Miami could not have gone any better. So he's at least worth our attention. Andre Iguodala still saw 24 minutes in this game and scored 9 points on 3 of 6 shooting, 3 three-pointers, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, and no defensive stats. He is not a fantasy guy. I mean, okay, I'll dial it back. He has some deep league appeal as a playmaker, as a guy who can get you a steal and a 3 here and there. He's not a standard league guy. I don't think anyone's thinking of him as such either. And, yeah, that's fine. He shouldn't be. And I didn't mention Bam Adebayo's stat line. Looks like he met Rudy Gobert pretty affirmatively in this one. 4 of 10 shooting from the floor, 9 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals, and 2 block shots. All accounts, a really, really nice line. But he was not able to get his shot going against the Stifle Tower, who we will lead off our Jazz side of things here. He had 16 points. 20 rebounds on 7 of 12 shooting with 2 block shots and an assist. He's been fine. No Mike Conley in this one. I believe this was a rest day, if I'm not mistaken. It might be an illness-related thing, too. It could be both. But Mike Conley, who's been playing really well lately, did not play, which means that Joe Ingles got to be the point guard again. And, you know, he's been interesting. In all the wrong ways, but interesting nonetheless. 1 of 9 shooting from – this is Joe Ingles, his stat line, by the way. In 32 minutes, he shot 1 of 9 from the floor, 4 points, 9 assists, 2 rebounds, and a steal, and no three-pointers. His shot is just so gone, and it was sort of going that direction before Conley came back, and for whatever reason, it's still the case with Conley out. It's not all – Conley's return is not the only reason why Joe Ingles is struggling. I don't know what the full picture is, but it's just – I just don't think that we – is he playing hurt? Is something off of his shooting mechanics? I don't know. His shot's been way, way off. And it's not all just explained by Conley's return. Not a standard league guy, even when Conley sits at this point. Bohan Bogdanovic continues to play really well, 22 points on 9 of 17 shooting, 3 three-pointers, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, and not much else. Donovan Mitchell led the team in scoring with 26 points on 9 of 16 shooting, 4 three-pointers, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals. And Jordan Clarkson continues his really, really hot run off the bench with 21 points on 8 of 12 shooting, 4 three-pointers, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal. He's fine while he's hot, but he's just a point specialist. And that's about that. Okay. Final game on the night. The Los Angeles Lakers beating the Denver Nuggets in overtime, 120 to 116. They now lead the season series 2-1. This is a pretty easy fantasy team to take apart. It's LeBron James and Anthony Davis. That's it. Davis, 33 points, 10 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks, and 3 three-pointers. The best player in the NBA type stuff, at least from a fantasy perspective. LeBron James triple-doubled with 32 points, 12 rebounds, 14 assists, no defensive stats, and a three-pointer on 15 of 29 shooting. And Dwight Howard played really well off the bench. Brutal podcast that came out about him earlier this week from Bill Simmons and Ryan Russillo. Worth a listen. I find Dwight's career to be pretty fascinating. I don't think that they give – they're definitely not nice to him, but it is interesting. I don't think it's all totally off base either. I think they touched on a lot of why Dwight Howard's been such a polarizing player. But he's, by all accounts, had a really, really good season with the Lakers, both from a public relations standpoint and both from a team – just from a team role standpoint. I think that he fits with the team really well right now. And he played well tonight. 14 points, 11 rebounds, 2 assists – on 4-6 shooting from the floor, 4 turnovers and no defensive stats. Missed half of his free throws. It's Dwight Howard's stuff, if only he blocked a shot or two. Yeah, there's nothing else talking about this Lakers team. I know I'm sort of rushing through the last games here, but honestly, I really have lucked out in that there's not a lot to talk about with the Lakers or the Mavericks or the Suns or the Kings or the Jazz. None of these teams are fantasy are very interesting from a fantasy perspective. And the Lakers in particular, they do not have a lot of interesting lines in this box score. The Nuggets are a relatively interesting team, though. We'll start with Jamal Murray, who led the scoring charge in this one. 32 points on 13 of 25 shots, 3 three-pointers, 3 rebounds, 10 assists, and nothing else there. Nikola Jokic, 9 of 18 from the floor, en route to 22 points, 11 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals, a block shot, and 2 three-pointers. In terms of fantasy, he might be the hottest player in the NBA right now. He's been tremendous. A far cry from the out-of-shape-looking top 40 player that he was to start the season. He has been a top 6 player over his last 2 months. Which is right where he was drafted. So, and just keep you. It's always worth keeping in mind. Nikola Jokic starts slow, but boy, when he gets it going, he gets it going. Elsewhere here, Gary Harris had a decent shooting game. 13 points on 5 of 12 shooting, 1 rebound, 1 assist, 1 steal. His fantasy game is all but evaporated, but he's going to continue seeing minutes because of his real life defensive ability. Jeremy Grant continues to start over Paul Millsap, who just recently returned from a lengthy absence, and he was good. 15 points, 7 rebounds, an assist, and a steal, and a three-pointer on 6 of 12 shooting. I am not convinced that he's going to hold off Millsap forever, and I think we saw this when Millsap was starting over him before. Jeremy Grant does not have a lot of fantasy value when he's not seeing a 30-minute role. So I've advocated some drops here and there, and I still stand by those, but he's obviously playing, as long as he's starting, he's got enough value to hold on, to be worth hanging on to. Millsap, to his credit, in 20 minutes, put up a pretty productive fantasy line. 10 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, 2 of 5 shooting from the floor, and a 3-pointer. I'll admit this. I have not considered the possibility that Denver just decides to, like, hey, Millsap's been hurt all year long. He's old. He's useful to our team. It's not the and Jeremy Grant is the power forward of the future for this squad. Maybe Millsap's more amenable to playing off the bench than he might have been to start the year. Maybe it makes sense to rest him. That would produce a fantasy situation that isn't terrible for either of those guys. Millsap obviously wouldn't be all that appealing in fantasy circles, but you know that would be in that sort of scenario. But he would still have some low end value, and Jeremy Grant would hold on to a lot of his value if he were able to start and see 30 minutes on a nightly basis. So keeping our eyes on that one. Also, you know, I still like Michael Porter Jr. a lot, and if he can stay healthy, I think he has a role to play with this team, but that's a conversation for a different day. Let's see. Monte Morris played 25 minutes off the bench, was fine. 12 points, 4 assists, 2 steals, 2 rebounds, and a 3-pointer. Some of these new Nuggets are getting into the mix here, but aren't doing much. Jordan McRae, for what it's worth, his days are obviously gone from being a fantasy asset. He only played 8 minutes in this game and had an assist. And Noah Vonleh played 12 minutes and scored 4 points with 4 rebounds. All right. that's an interesting way to end the show, isn't it? That's pretty much it, the Nuggets side of things. I'm keeping my eye on Michael Porter Jr. for when he comes back and how he works his way into these rotations. Will Barton obviously is also still out with his knee issue, so he's probably going to take a lot of the minutes that Torrey Craig saw, who saw 30 minutes in the starting lineup, but he didn't do enough. Not enough for me to talk about. Yeah, so that's the show, guys. I got to say, I paced myself better, at least from in terms of not running out of breath. Show might have run a little long here, but yeah, what am I going to do? It's 22 teams to go over. If you guys like the show, please let me know on Twitter at Alan Srochi, AlanSrochi. The link will be, my profile will be linked to the post on Twitter. Reach out to me for if you guys ever have any Twitter, any fantasy related questions. I love answering them. I am usually a lot better about doing this, but I do these watch lists, daily watch lists for the teams that go up and play. Tell you guys, all the things that I'm looking for. Very similar to my analysis that I give here. A lot of the thoughts that I've talked about on here you can find on Twitter. And, yeah, subscribe to the show. If you made it all the way to the end, throw me a comment. Let's say tree trunk. Just tweet at me, tree trunk, if you listen to the show. I'd love to hear from you guys. I love doing these, and I hope that you guys enjoy the All-Star break. I'll catch you next Wednesday for here from HoopBall. The Box Score Breakdown. I'm Alex Ruby. Have a great night, everyone.
This has been a Hoop Ball presentation.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.